On today's episode, we meet with Nikki from Florida. She tells us about a pretty frightening experience she had growing up inside of a haunted mobile home. We also get into investigating cases that could have multiple explanations. Is it a malevolent entity that is trying to run a family out of a home? Or could it be a ghostly warning?
Advice from the pros. Advice from the pros. Stories from the haunted. From the haunted. You're listening to the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast.
Welcome back to Ghost Hunter Advice. I'm your host, Tanner. And today's episode, we're trying something new. So back in the day, early in the podcast, I used to start off with a story of one of my encounters, something that I had learned along the way to open a discussion about the episode's topic. Recently, I started having some call-ins and talking to people about their experiences. Nikki from Florida had an amazing story and a terrifying encounter that I think opens the discussion for ghostly encounters and how we interpret activity and how we interpret spirit communication. So let's go ahead and get into this call, and then we'll talk about it a bit. All right, our next caller is Nikki from Florida. Nikki's going to share her experience growing up in a haunted mobile home. So, Nikki, thanks for coming on the show, and just kind of start from the top and tell us what that was like and your experiences in that home.
It was living in that mobile home was pure hell. I don't know if I could say that word. Yep. We moved into it when I was about 13, 14. We bought it from a mobile home place, put it out on our piece of property. Things didn't start right off the bat. Things started happening probably within about a year, year and a half after moving in. Started off with little things. Things just moving around where you know you didn't put them. Cats, we had three cats, and they refused to go into the very back bedroom. It was a single wide. We had the kitchen, living room, bedroom, bathroom, and then a bedroom in the back. And they refused to go in this last bedroom. Would not set foot in it at all. Even if you pick them up and put them in there, they would screech and scratch you and run out the door as fast as they could. They would not go in there. I remember one time I was about 14. My mom and my stepdad and my little baby sister, they went somewhere. I can't remember where. And I decided to stay home. I was in the living room watching TV, and I heard something like a door moving back and forth, like somebody was playing with a knob from the back door. And I got up and I went to go see what, if, you know, somebody was back there, somebody was, you know, playing a trick or something. Nobody back there. Looked outside, nobody out there. We had a big wide backyard, so if anybody had been there, you would have seen them. Went back and sat back down and was watching the movie and did it again. And this time the door swung wide open. I'm talking about swung wide open. I got up thinking, okay, maybe I didn't close it all the way. So I closed it, and we had a latch where you actually had to, I don't know how to describe it, was something where you actually had to latch the door where, you know, the door could not open at all. And went back down, started the movie again. Heard the door swung wide open again. There is no way this door could have opened by itself. You actually would have to unlatch it to open it.
That was actually going to be a question. Like this door, did the hallway dead end at the door? Or was it on like the sidewalk?
No, the hallway dead end into the back bedroom.
Okay.
So it did not dead end to the, you actually had to walk a few more feet because the bathroom was across from the back door. And then if you walked a little bit more was the door to the back bedroom. And there was no way, you know, somebody actually would have had to be inside. And I checked all bedrooms and closets and everything. I was alone in this house. You actually had to be inside to unlock this door, to unlatch it.
Wow.
It freaked me out. I actually ran out and I was in my backyard for about an hour until my family came back because I was scared to death. Then things started getting even more. We would be sitting in the living room and the kitchen table had, you know, we had four chairs around it. And the chairs would move out from underneath the table all by themselves. While all of us are sitting here in the living room watching TV, we're seeing this.
So when you guys were watching TV, the chairs would actually move. Would you hear them and turn around or did you actually see them?
No, they were right in front of us. Okay. They were right in front of us. You didn't, it wasn't something you heard from behind you. We actually seen it. We were, you know, because the kitchen was right in front of the living room. So you could see the whole entire kitchen and the table and chairs was right inside the kitchen. And we're sitting here and we're seeing these chairs move all by themselves. The cats were nowhere near, so they weren't moving them. We had no dogs.
Now, when they were moving, how were they moving? Were they scooting out from the table? Were they?
They were just sliding, and you would hear them the bottom of the chairs screeching on the floor. You know how when you move a chair on linoleum, it gives you that screeching kind of sound. That's the sound they would make. And we're like, what the heck is going on here? Then it started off with my little sister. Okay. She would look dead at my mother and this man's voice. She's only like 2 years old at this time. And a man's voice, what she would tell our mother, you're going to die. And this is a two-year-old that's just learning to talk. And she's got this man voice coming out of her. And she cut off the cat's whiskers. And when we asked her why she did that, she said the little boy made her do it. And we're like, what little boy? She's like, the little boy. You would see, my mother told me one story where she was up late one night. Everybody was in bed. She was watching TV and she thought my stepdad had came out from the hallway to ask her when she was coming to bed. And when she turned around to say, I'll be in bed in a little while, nobody was there. But she said it looked just like him and he was in bed snoring away, she said. The only person I can think of that could do it because when I was in because I had the very back bedroom. I remember waking up one night and there's this teenage boy leaning over me, watching me sleeping. It scared me to death. It scared me. I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here kind of thing. I do know when we lived there for a few years, after those few years, we had had enough. We could not take it no more. We decided to let the mortgage company say, here, come get the trailer. It's yours. We're done. We can't take it no more. I know when they came, the guys that were going to hook up the trailer to move it, they came out and it was two big burly guys. They had to be about 6'3", 6'4", 250, 300 pound guys. They were huge. They asked if they could go in to see if there was anything they had to tie down. He said, go right ahead. And they were in there not even 5 minutes, and they came out screaming and said they will never step foot in that trailer ever again. Finally, the trailer people had to call somebody else to do it because these guys weren't coming back. When they came out there to get the trailer, they didn't go in. They didn't go in. They did not go in this trailer. I guess the other people told them. I don't know if they talked to them. I don't know. But we know the other people that they didn't go inside the trailer at all. But while they were pulling the trailer off our property, there was little tiny handprints on the top of the windows, too high for my little sister to have put her handprints on. They were just too high. They were at the very top of the windows. And they were on every single window of the trailer as the trailer was pulling off. 3 days after the trailer was gone, my mom or stepdad got a call telling them that they are not liable. The trailer was not going on their credit because the trailer caught on fire. And the trailer wasn't even hooked up to anything when it caught on fire. It wasn't arson. It wasn't anything. It just caught on fire. They said it was they didn't know what to call it. They're calling it a faulty wire, even though it wasn't hooked up to no electric at all. Basically said we would have been killed. So I don't know what to call it. They basically called it all I know is they didn't put it on my mom or my stepdad's credit.
They probably would have been able to collect the insurance off that, so that it wasn't a loss for them.
But yeah, it was it was hell living in that trailer.
Wow.
It was hell.
I do have a couple of questions for you. This is the trailer itself. So you guys owned the lot and the property that it was on?
Yeah, we owned the land. We owned the 2 acres that the trailer was on.
Now, the 2 acres, how long had you or your family owned that land?
We owned it. I know me and my mom, before she married my stepdad, had moved on to it. We had a trailer previous on it before, just me and my mom, before she met my stepdad. Mm-hmm. And we moved there in 1989, and we had a trailer on there before, and nothing happened.
Okay, that was going to be my question, if you guys owned it before, if anything happened. So you guys moved this one on. Was this used, or was this a new build?
This was a used trailer.
Did you ever get any of the history on it? Any of the prior owners?
We do know there was a small fire in the back bedroom, and they repaired it before they resold the trailer to us. But it was a small fire. That's all we know, that it was a small fire in that back bedroom.
Okay. Do you know if they said anybody passed in it, or were you able to find out where it was located before that company?
No, we don't know. All we know is it came from somewhere in Central Florida because it had like a sticker that you used to have to get put on trailers. It had the county on it kind of thing. But as of if we know anybody died, no, we don't know.
When people think of haunted houses and haunted homes, everybody thinks of like the Victorian and like these multi-level homes.
Before I lived in this thing. Right?
Most of my most terrifying encounters have been in like old, like 70s style single wide trailers. My aunt used to own a couple of parks down in Florida. And some of the stuff that happened in those units, because you would buy these used units and a lot of times people had passed in them. God, the activity.
Lived in a couple of haunted trailers. When I was younger than that, me and my mom lived in South Florida in a trailer that was built in 1959. The smoke detectors that didn't even have batteries or weren't even hooked up to electric would go off at 3 o'clock in the morning every morning.
We do know
an older Italian woman had committed suicide in that trailer at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. And that's in another trailer. That's not in this one.
No, not the same one. Okay. This is from when I was younger, when I was like 10 or 11 years old.
A lot of people, like, they think about like property and land whenever there's a mobile unit or whenever there's anything on a piece of property. But these trailers and these things themselves, they can store energy and store spirits and hauntings or attachments if things have gone down in them. And with this, since the trailer caught fire, I mean, do you have any theories whether that thing just burned it down or if maybe something in there was trying to scare you guys out because it knew that there was a bad wire?
Well, I do know. I don't know if it has anything to do with it or it's just coincidence. 2 days before the people came and got the trailer off our property, I had a nightmare. And I can still, usually you can't remember dreams after, you know, an hour or two. This one, I can still remember to this day. I had a dream. I was in the trailer. And well, actually, I opened the front door. And I walk into the trailer and the whole entire trailer is on fire. And my family is inside burning up. I can hear the screams and everything. And in this dream, this girl, I've never seen this girl before, have no idea who she is. But in my dream, she just kept telling me, get your family out, get your, all she said all through the dream, get your family out, get your family out. And then 3 days later, you know, they come get the trailer, and then 3 days after that, the trailer catches on fire.
So that was 3 days prior to you guys being in this trailer, or 3 days after you guys were out of this trailer and it caught fire. That's when you had the dream, 3 day window.
I had 3 days. Okay, so when 6 days before it caught on fire, okay. 3 days before they came and got the trailer, and then after they caught and got the trailer, 3 days after that is when it caught on fire. So 6 days.
Now I know this, the things moving, what sounded initially like a threat, you're going to die, from a 2-year-old child and you guys being scared out of this. Do you think that this entity was just trying to get you out of the freaking trailer before this fire happened?
Now you just say that, that makes me think, you know, I always thought it was, you know, I don't know, because it all, you know, it scared me to death. I always thought it as, you know, not evil, but malicious, I guess you would call it.
You've got a lot of activity here that matches up.
Now that you mentioned that, it's a possibility. I just don't understand why the little, my sister kept saying the little boy made her cut the cat's whiskers off.
He might have just been a dick. It's like, there's like different levels of bad. It's like, yeah, he's a prick, but he doesn't want you to burn to death.
Yeah. She cut the whiskers off, but she only cut one side of their whiskers. So for months and months, all three cats only had whiskers on one side of the faces.
Those poor cats. I've seen that. They're all like falling off stuff and. Man, but the information that you've given me, the doppelganger, the man's voice and the things that are kind of influential and possessive that we think of like demons and negative entities and negative inhuman spirits, like that's there. But if you look at it with the light of you had that dream before the trailer caught fire, instead of seeing a threat, maybe a warning, hey, you're going to die. And then just stuff to try to get you out of the trailer by moving things. And maybe, you know, it's scaring you. And maybe that wasn't their intention. They just wanted to make contact they thought, hey, you know what? We can't get them to listen. Or maybe we're having trouble getting this message through. Let's just scare the hell out of them and get them out of this building before something happens.
That's possible.
Thank you so much for sharing this story. Yeah, that's just, I don't have words. That's incredible. And it,
yeah,
I mean, it matches up with so many different types of phenomena, but thanks for coming on. And it's been great talking to you.
Thank you. It's one of those where me and my family still talk about it to this day because we're like, whoa.
It's a lot to process.
Yes,
absolutely. But cool. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. And you guys out there, stay tuned, and we'll keep rolling with this episode of Ghost Hunter Advice. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Nikki's story gives us an amazing opportunity to talk about a couple of things that I've wanted to talk about for a while. One, ghostly warnings, if that's what happened. And the other is how we interpret cases, how we interpret the activity that's going on in a home. If you're an investigator, or if you are someone who's experiencing things in their home, things are falling off of shelves, you're seeing things move around your house, there's a voice telling you to get out, or your toddler's possessed and speaking in a gruff older man's voice telling you you're going to die. Those things can be absolutely terrifying, and it is easy to come to the conclusion that something is trying to scare you out of your house. And you might be right. In Nikki's encounter, the story she shared, it's a coin toss. Was the entity or entities trying to warn the family to get them out of the residence before something happened? Or was it something else? Was this just pleasure for the entity? Was this something that the entity likes to feed off of negative energy, so it's scaring the family? We'll never know for sure. I think it's a little suspect that the trailer caught on fire after the family was out of the house. And I mean, that could be completely unrelated to any of this. And it could have just been a super jerky ghost that wanted to scare the family. But that's where interpretations are so important. If we follow the current popular theories when it comes to investigating hauntings, and when it comes to talking about and our understanding of activity, ghosts are trying to communicate. They might just not be that good at it. So think about if you're an investigator, when you're out on a case. I've had it happen where batteries have drained and we've seen a little bit of activity. Everyone's talked about cold spots and how thermal energy can be fed on or converted by a spirit to manifest. The one thing that we all seem to be in a lot of agreement about is that manifestation takes a lot of energy. And it usually happens in spikes. Very, very rarely have any of us in the field, myself included, and investigators that I've talked to. I'm gonna narrow it to that. Investigators that I personally know that have investigated, books that I've read, and in my encounters, generally, when there's a manifestation or some sort of action, it's very, very fast. It might be violent. It might be a picture flying off a wall, or what we would conceive, or what we would believe might be a violent act, a picture flying off the wall, when in reality, it could just be the entity trying to get our attention. In the paranormal field, one of the reasons is television show and reality shows, we are way, way, way too quick to jump to the assumption that the voice that we heard, or an EVP that could have been a spirit just trying to talk and sounds like a growl, is demonic or evil or bad, or there's some sort of malicious intent. You know what? Sometimes there might be, but is it always? And in Nikki's case, let's take this activity, this experience, and break it down. So when she was living in the trailer, the activity that she talked about, her sister, who was a toddler, a female toddler, talking in the voice of a gruff old man, telling the mother that she's going to die, seeing apparitions in the apartment of a boy leaning over a bed, the dream about the fire. All of these they're terrifying. And I mean, I don't care if it is a spirit trying to get something across. It doesn't change the fact that that is going to scare anyone. That'd scare me. I've been doing this for 22 years. That'd scare most of the investigators that I know. It's frightening. But could there have been some other intent there? You're going to die could easily be construed as a warning looking back, since we have the fire as context. Now, in the time, I would have taken that as a threat. As an investigator, if I was working a case and that happened, I would take that as a threat. Now, when the family gets scared out and the place burns down, I'm probably going to reevaluate. And that brings me to another point. When we are I bumped the mic again. I'm going to keep that in there. Anyway, when we're interpreting evidence and when we're interpreting our encounters during an investigation, we really can only go in that moment. Something that I feel like a lot of guys fall into, and I did too early on, is you get that feeling and then that rules the entire case. Even if evidence pops up that, okay, so maybe what happened there wasn't such a negative interaction. Maybe it was just an attempt to communicate, but I only got part of the message, or they only had enough power, or however this works, to manifest a quick pop, to knock a dish over, to let them know I'm there, or let me know they're there. Jeez, why was that so hard to say? So basically, with all of this, and using Nikki's encounter as an example, guys, keep an open mind. Now, in that specific instance, was it a threat? Was it a warning? We'll never know. There's no way to know. But in your cases moving forward, when you have this activity that pops up, challenge it a bit more. When something seems scary, stay there a bit longer. Try to get a little bit more interaction. Maybe it's not. Now, if something's scratching you or the stuff that you see on television that sometimes does happen in the field, but is extremely, extremely rare. If you're feeling threatened, get out. But keep an open mind. Don't let first impressions of a situation completely dominate the investigation. And I'm talking to ghost hunters and investigators in this one. Keep an open mind and make sure that you see all of the evidence, weigh all of the facts. And when you're wrong about something, just change your opinion. Mark it in the report. Let the property owner know. Those of you that have listened to this podcast, there are a couple of issues that I have changed my mind on over time with new equipment, new techniques, and things that I have learned about different theories in quantum mechanics, the different and new ways of collecting and analyzing evidence. What I thought on spirit boxes, that's a big one. So when you find something that challenges your viewpoint, this is a new studio setup and I am still getting the hang of it. If you've seen any of the videos, you know I talk with my hands a lot. But anyway, what I'm saying, guys, keep an open mind. Your first impression on a case, especially in a complex investigation where you have all of these different types of activity happening, like in Nikki's story, it can be easy to jump to a conclusion and stay there. But look at all of the evidence and look at the entire story as a whole before you close the case. Thanks for bearing with me on this. If you have not already and you want to connect with the show, I would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Do you think this was a warning? Do you think that this was maybe a coincidence or the ghost burnt down the trailer? Let's talk about it. If you're not already, go ahead and jump on the Facebook group. It's Ghost Hunter Advice. I'll have a link in the show notes. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram if you haven't already. And if you have an encounter that you would like to share, email me at ghosthunteradvice@gmail.com. If you have questions you'd like to hear answered on the air, again, email me at ghosthunteradvice@gmail.com. Guys, I will see you on the next episode, dropping not this Tuesday, but the next.